Hello, everyone. We are continuing on with Thomas Brooks' Precious Remedies Against Satan's Devices. We're in an overall section where Satan tries to keep souls in sad, doubting, and questioning conditions. We did device number 5 last time, suggesting that to them that the conflict that is within them is not a conflict only in the saints, but a conflict that is also found in hypocrites and profane souls. In device 6, suggesting to the soul that surely his estate is not good because he cannot joy and rejoice in Christ as he once could, because he seems to have lost the comfort and joy he seemed to once have. And Lord willing, we're going to continue on with device 7 here. And so we'll go ahead and start. The 7th device that Satan has to keep souls in a sad, doubting, and questioning condition is device number 7. By suggesting to the soul his often relapses into the same sin which formerly he had pursued with particular sorrow, grief, shame, and tears, and prayed, complained, and resolved against. Says Satan, your heart is not right with God. Surely your estate is not good. You do but flatter yourself to think that ever God will eternally own and embrace such a one as you are, who complains against sin and yet relapses into the same sin, who with tears and groans confesses your sin, and yet ever and anon or later are fallen into the same sin. That's what Satan says. Back to Brooks, I confess this is a very sad condition for a soul after he has obtained mercy and pity from the Lord, after God has spoken peace and pardon to him and wiped the tears from his eyes and set him upon his legs to return to folly. How do relapses lay men open to the greatest afflictions and worst temptations? The footnote, a backslider may say, all my pains and charge is lost. How do they make the wound to bleed afresh? How do they darken and cloud former assurances and evidences for heaven? How do they put a sword into the hand of conscience to cut and slash the soul? They raise such fears, terrors, horrors, and doubts in the soul that the soul cannot be so frequent in duty as formerly, nor so fervent in duty as formerly, nor so confident in duty as formerly, nor so bold, familiar, and delightful with God in duty as formerly, nor so constant in duty as formerly. They give Satan an advantage to triumph over Christ. They make the work of repentance more difficult. They make a man's life a burden, and they render death to be very terrible unto the soul, etc. Now, the remedies against this device are these. Remedy number 1. The first remedy against this device of Satan is solemnly to consider that there are many scriptures that do clearly evidence a possibility of the saints falling into the same sins whereof they have formerly repented, and that it is possible for actual saints to do that. I will heal their black backslidings. I will love them freely, for mine anger is turned away from them, says the Lord by the prophet Hosea, chapter 14, verse 4. So the prophet Jeremiah speaks, go and proclaim these words toward the north and say, return, thou backsliding Israel, saith the Lord, and I will not cause mine anger to fall upon you. For I am merciful, saith the Lord, and I will not keep mine anger forever. Turn, O backsliding Israel, saith the Lord, for I am married unto you, and I will take you one of a city and two of a family, and I will bring you to Zion. Chapter 3, 12 and 14. So the psalmist, they turned back and dealt unfaithfully with their fathers. They were turned aside like a deceitful bow. And no wonder, for though their repentance be never so sincere and sound, yet their graces are but weak and their mortification imperfect in this life. Though by grace they are freed from the dominion of sin and from the damnatory power of every sin, and from the love of all sin, yet grace does not free them from the seed of any one sin, and therefore it is possible for a soul to fall again and again into the same sin. If the fire be not wholly or fully put out, who would think it impossible that it should catch and burn again and again? The footnote, the sin of backsliding is a soul-wounding sin. I will heal their backsliding. You read of no arms for the back, though you do for the breast. When a soldier bragged too much of a great scar in his forehead, Augustus Caesar, in whose time Christ was born, asked him if he did not get it as he looked back when he fled. Remedy number two, the second remedy against this device of Satan, is seriously to consider that God has nowhere engaged himself by any particular promise that souls converted and united to Christ shall not fall again and again into the same sin after conversion. I cannot find it in the whole book of God where he has promised any such strength or power against this or that particular sin as that the soul should be forever in this life put out of a possibility of falling again and again into the same sins, and where God has not a mouth to speak, I must not have a heart to believe. God will graciously pardon those sins to his people that he will not in this life effectually subdue in his people. I would go far to speak with that soul that can show me a promise that when our sorrow and grief has been so great or so much for this and that sin, that then God will preserve us forever falling into the same sin. The sight of such a promise would be as life from the dead to many a precious soul who desires nothing more than to keep close to Christ and fears nothing more than backsliding from Christ. The footnote, in some cases the saints have found God better than his word. He promised the children of Israel only the land of Canaan, but besides that he gave them two other kingdoms which he never promised. And to Zacharias he promised to give him his speech at the birth of the child, but besides that he gave him the gift of prophecy. Remedy number three, the third remedy against this device of Satan, is seriously to consider that the most renowned and now crowned saints have, in the days of their being on earth, relapsed into one and the same sin. The footnote, a sheep may often slip into the slough as well as the swine. Lot was twice overcome with wine. John twice worshipped the angel. Abraham did often dissemble and lay his wife open to adultery to save his own life, which some heathens would not have done. And it came to pass, when God caused me to wander from my father's house, that I said unto her, this is thy kindness which thou shalt show unto me at every place whither we shall come, say of me, as he is my brother. Genesis 20, verse 13. David, in his wrath, was resolved, if ever man was, that he would be the death of Nabal and all his innocent family, and after this he fell into the foul murder of Uriah. Though Christ told his disciples that his kingdom was not of this world, yet again and again and again, three several times they would needs be on horseback, they would fain be high, great, and glorious in this world. Their pride and ambition humor put them, that were but as so many beggars, upon striving for preeminence and greatness in the world. When their Lord and Master told them three several times of his sufferings in the world and of his going out of the world. Jehoshaphat, though a godly man, yet joins affinity with Ahab, 2 Chronicles 18, 1-3, and verses 30 and 31. And though he was saved by a miracle, yet soon after he falls into the same sin and joins himself with Ahaziah, king of Israel, who did very wickedly, 2 Chronicles 20, 35-37. Samson is by the Spirit of the Lord numbered among the faithful worthies, yet he fell often into one gross sin, as in evident in Hebrews 11, 32. Peter, you know, relapsed often, and so did Jonah. And this comes to pass that they may see their own inability to stand, to resist, or overcome any temptation or corruptions, Jude verses 14-16. The footnote, perhaps the prodigal sets out unto us a Christian relapse, for he was a son before, S-O-N, before, and with his father, and then went away from him and spent all and yet he was not quite undone, but returned again. And that they may be taken off from all false confidences and rest wholly or fully upon God, and only upon God, and always upon God, and for the praise and honor of the power, wisdom, skill, mercy, and goodness of the physician of our souls that can heal, help, and cure when the disease is most dangerous, when the soul is relapsed and grows worse and worse, and when others say there is no help for him in his God, and when his own heart and hopes are dying. So God will allow these things to happen so that he is magnified, including his wisdom and skill and power, and that we continue to learn to rely on him and him alone. The footnote, the prodigal saw the compassion of his father the greater in receiving him after he had run away from him. Remedy number four, the fourth remedy against this device of Satan, is to consider that there are relapses into enormities and there are relapses into infirmities. Now, it is not usual with God to leave his people frequently to relapse into enormities, for by his spirit and grace, by his smiles and frowns, by his word and rod, he does usually preserve his people from a frequent relapsing into enormities. Yet he does leave his choicest ones frequently to relapse into infirmities, and of his grace he pardons them in course, such as idle words, passion, vain thoughts, etc. The footnote, relapses into enormities are wounding and wasting sins. Therefore, the Lord is graciously pleased to put under his everlasting arms and stay his chosen ones from frequent falling into them. Though gracious souls strive against these and complain of these and weep over these, yet the Lord, to keep them humble, leaves them frequently to relapse into these, and these frequent relapses into infirmities shall never be their bane because they be their burden. Remedy number five, the fifth remedy against this device of Satan, is to consider that there are involuntary relapses and there are voluntary relapses. Involuntary relapses are when the resolution and full bent of the heart is against sin, when the soul strives with all its might against sin, by sighs and groans, and prayers and tears, and yet out of weakness is forced to fall back into sin because there is not spiritual strength enough to overcome. Now, though involuntary relapses must humble us, yet they must never discourage nor defect us, for God will freely and readily pardon those in course. Voluntary relapses are when the soul longs and loves to return to the flesh pots of Egypt, Exodus 16:3. When it is a pleasure and a pastime to a man to return to his old courses, such voluntary relapses speak out the man blinded, hardened, and ripened for ruin, etc. The footnote, there is a great difference between a sheep that is by weakness falls into the mire and a swine that delights to wallow in the mire, between a woman that is forced, though she strives and cries out, and an alluring adulteress. Remedy number six, the sixth remedy against this device of Satan, is to consider that there is no such power or infinite virtue in the greatest horror or sorrow the soul can be under for sin, nor in the sweetest or choicest discoveries of God's grace and love to the soul, as forever to fence and secure the soul from relapsing into the same sin. Grace is but a created habit that may be prevailed against by the secret, subtle, and strong workings of sin in our hearts, and those discoveries that God makes of his love, beauty, and glory to the soul do not always abide in their freshness and power upon the heart, but by degrees they fade and wear off, and then the soul may return again to folly, as we see in Peter, who, after he had a glorious testimony from Christ's own mouth of his blessedness and happiness, labors to prevent Christ from going up to Jerusalem to suffer out of bare slavish fears that he and his fellows could not be secure if his master should be brought to suffer, Matthew 16:15-19 in 22 to 24. And again, after this, Christ had him up into the mount, and there showed him his beauty and his glory to strengthen him against the hour of temptation that was coming upon him. And yet, soon after, he had the honor and happiness of seeing the glory of the Lord, which most of his disciples did not. He basely and most shamefully denies the Lord of glory, thinking by that means to provide for his own safety. And yet again, after Christ had broke his heart with a look of love for his most unloving dealings, and bade them that were first acquainted with his resurrection to go and tell Peter that he was risen, Mark 16, verse 7, I say, after all this, slavish fears prevail upon him, and he basely dissembles and plays the Jew with the Jews and the Gentile with the Gentiles to the seducing of Barnabas, etc., Galatians 2, 11 to 13. The footnote back in providing for his own safety, Christ upbraided his disciples for their unbelief and hardness of heart, who had seen his glory as the glory of the only begotten Son of God, full of grace and truth. Back to Brooks, yet by way of caution, no, it is very rare that God does leave his beloved ones frequently to relapse into one and the same gross sin, for the law of nature is in arms against gross sins, as well as the law of grace, so that a gracious soul cannot, dares not, will not frequently return to gross folly. And God has made even his dearest ones dearly smart for their relapses, as may be seen by his dealings with Samson, Jehoshaphat, and Peter. Ah, Lord, what a hard heart has that man that can see you stripping and whipping your dearest ones for their relapses, and yet make nothing of returning to folly, etc. All right, that is the end of device number 7. Going on, the 8th device that Satan has to keep the soul in a sad, doubting, and questionable condition is device number 8, by persuading them that their estate is not good, their hearts are not upright, their graces are not sound, because they are so followed, vexed, and tormented with temptations. It is his method, first, to weary and vex your soul with temptations, and then to tempt the soul that surely it is not beloved, because it is so much tempted. And by this stratagem, he keeps many precious souls in a sad, doubting, and mourning, M-O-U-R, temper many years, as many of the precious sons of Zion have found by woeful experience, etc. The footnote, he may so tempt as to make a saint weary of his life. Job 10, verse 1, my soul is weary of my life. Now, the remedies against this device of Satan are these. Remedy number 1, the first remedy against this device of Satan is solemnly to consider that those that have been best and most beloved have been most tempted by Satan. Though Satan can never rob a Christian of his crown, yet such is his malice that he will therefore tempt that he may spoil them of their comforts. Such is his enmity to the Father, that the nearer and dearer any child is to him, the more will Satan trouble him and vex him with temptations. Christ himself was most near and most dear, most innocent and most excellent, and yet none so much tempted as Christ. David was dearly beloved, and yet by Satan tempted to number the people. The footnote, pirates do not use to set upon poor empty vessels, and beggars need not fear the thief. Those that have most of God and are most rich in grace shall be most set upon by Satan, who is the greatest and wisest pirate in the world. Job was highly praised by God himself and yet much tempted. Witness those sad things that fell from his mouth when he was wet to the skin. Peter was much prized by Christ. Witness that choice testimony that Christ gave of his faith and happiness, and his showing him his glory in the mount, and that eye of pity that he cast upon him after his fearful fall, etc., and yet tempted by Satan. And the Lord said, Simon, Simon, behold, Satan hath desired to have you, that he may sift you as wheat, but I have prayed for thee, that thy faith fail thee not, etc., Luke 22:31-32. Paul had the honor of being exalted as high as heaven and of seeing that glory that could not be expressed, and yet he was no sooner stepped out of heaven, but he is buffeted by Satan, lest he should be exalted above measure, 2 Corinthians 12:2-7. If these that were so really, so gloriously, so eminently beloved of God, if these that have lived in heaven and set their feet upon the stars have been tempted, let no saints judge themselves not to be beloved because they are tempted. It is as natural for saints to be tempted that are dearly beloved as it is for the sun to shine or a bird to sing. The eagle complains not of her wings, nor the peacock of his train, nor the nightingale of her voice, because these are natural to them. No more should saints of their temptations, because they are natural to them. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places, Ephesians 6:12. Remedy number two, the second remedy against this device of Satan, is to consider that all the temptations that befall the saints shall be sanctified to them by a hand of love. Ah, the choice experiences that the saints get of the power of God supporting them, of the wisdom of God directing them, so to handle their spiritual weapons, their graces, as not only to resist but to overcome, of the mercy and goodness of the Lord pardoning and succoring them, of them. And therefore, says Paul, I received the messenger of Satan for to buffet me, lest I should be exalted, lest I should be exalted above measure, 2 Corinthians 12:7. Twice in that verse, he begins with it and ends with it. If he had not been buffeted, who knows how his heart would have swelled? He might have been carried higher in conceit than before he was in his ecstasy. Temptation is God's school, wherein he gives his people the clearest and sweetest discoveries of his love, a school wherein God teaches his people to be more frequent and fervent in duty. The footnote, Luther said, there were three things that made a preacher, meditation, prayer, and temptation. When Paul was buffeted, then he prayed thrice, i.e. frequently and fervently, a school wherein God teaches his people to be more tender, meek, and compassionate to other poor, tempted souls than ever, a school wherein God teaches his people to see a greater evil in sin than ever, and a greater emptiness in the creature than ever, and a greater need of Christ and free grace than ever, a school wherein God will teach his people that all temptations are but his goldsmiths, by which he will try and refine and make his people more bright and glorious. The issue of all temptations shall be to the good of the saints, as you may see by the temptations that Adam and Eve and Christ and David and Job and Peter and Paul met with. Those hands of power and love, that bright light out of darkness, good out of evil, sweet out of bitter, life out of death, heaven out of hell, will bring much sweet and good to his people out of all the temptations that come upon them. Remedy number three, the third remedy against this device of Satan, is wisely to consider that no temptations do hurt or harm the saints so long as they are resisted by them and prove the greatest afflictions that can befall them. It is not Satan's tempting, but your assenting, not his enticing, but your yielding that makes temptations hurtful to your soul. If the soul, when it is tempted, resists temptation and says with Christ, "Get thee behind me, Satan," Matthew 16:23, and with that young convert, "I am not the man I was," or as Luther counsels all men to answer all temptations with these words, "I am a Christian." If a man's temptation be his greatest affliction, then is the temptation no sin upon his soul, though it be a trouble upon his mind. When a soul can look the Lord in the face and say, "Ah, Lord, I have many outward troubles upon me. I have lost such and such a near mercy, and such desirable mercies, And yet you that know the heart, you know that all my crosses and losses do not make so many wounds in my soul, nor fetch so many sighs from my heart, tears from my eyes, as those temptations do that Satan follows my soul with. When it is thus with the soul, then temptations are only the soul's trouble. They are not the soul's sin. Satan is a malicious and envious enemy. As his names are, so is he. His names are all names of enmity, the accuser, the tempter, the destroyer, the devourer, the envious man. And this malice and envy of his, he shows sometimes by tempting men to such sins as are quite contrary to the temperature of their bodies, as he did Vespasian and Julian, men of sweet and excellent natures, to the most bloody murderers. The footnote, sometimes he shows his malice by letting those things abide by the soul as most vex and plague the soul, as Gregory observes in his leaving of Job's wife, which was not out of his forgetfulness, carelessness, or any love or pity to Job, but to vex and torment him, and to work him to blaspheme God, despair, and die, etc. Back to Brooks. And sometimes he shows his malice by tempting men to such things as will bring them no honor nor profit, etc. Fall down and worship me, Matthew 4:9, to blasphemy and atheism, etc. The thoughts and the first motions whereof cause the heart and flesh to tremble. And sometimes he shows his malice by tempting them to those sins which they have not found their natures prone to and which they abhor in others. Now, if the soul resists these, and complains of these, and groans and mourns under these, and looks up to the Lord Jesus to be delivered from these, then shall they not be put down to the soul's account, but to Satan's account, who shall be so much the more tormented by how much the more the saints have been by him maliciously tempted, etc. Make present and peremptory resistance, or present and peremptory resistance against Satan's temptations, bid defiance to the temptation at first sight. It is safe to resist. It is dangerous to dispute. Eve lost herself and her posterity by falling into lists of dispute or artifices of dispute when she should have resisted and stood upon terms of defiance with Satan. He that would stand in the hour of temptation must plead with Christ, it is written, or as Christ did. He that would triumph over temptations must plead still, it is written. The footnote, when Constantine the emperor was told that there was no means to cure his leprosy but by bathing his body in the blood of infants, he presently answered, I had rather not be cured than use such a remedy. Satan is bold and impudent, and if you are not peremptory in your resistance, he will give you fresh onsets. It is your greatest honor and your highest wisdom peremptorily to withstand the beginnings of a temptation, for an after remedy comes often too late. Mrs. Catherine Breccheridge once, after a great conflict with Satan, said, "Reason not with me, I am but a weak woman. If you have anything to say, say it to my Christ. He is my advocate, my strength, and my redeemer, and he shall plead for me." Men must not seek to resist Satan's craft with craft, but by open defiance. He shoots with Satan in his own bow, who thinks by disputing and reasoning to put him off. As soon as a temptation shows its face, say to the temptation, as Ephraim to his idols, "Get you hence, what have I any more to do with you?" Hosea 14:8. Oh, say to the temptation, as David said to the sons of Zeruiah, "What have I to do with you?" 2 Samuel 16:10. "You will be too hard for me." He that does thus resist temptations shall never be undone by temptations, etc. The footnote, I have read of one who, being tempted with offers of money to desert Christ, gave this excellent answer: Let not any man think that he will embrace other men's goods to forsake Christ, who has forsaken his own proper goods to follow Christ. Make strong and constant resistance against Satan's temptations. Make resistance against temptations by arguments drawn from the honor of God, the love of God, your union and communion with God, and from the blood of Christ, the death of Christ, the kindness of Christ, the intercession of Christ, and the glory of Christ, and from the voice of the Spirit, the counsel of the Spirit, the comforts of the Spirit, the presence of the Spirit, the seal of the Spirit, the whisperings of the Spirit, the commands of the Spirit, the assistance of the Spirit, the witness of the Spirit, and from the glory of heaven, the excellency of grace, the beauty of holiness, the worth of the soul, and the vileness or bitterness and evil of sin, the least sin being a greater evil than the greatest temptation in the world. And look that you make constant resistance as well as strong resistance, be constant in arms. Satan will come on with new temptations when old ones are too weak. Now the footnote, Luke 4:13, and when the devil had ended all the temptations, he departed from him for a season. Christ had no rest until he was exactly tried with all kinds of temptations. In a calm, prepare for a storm. The tempter is restless, impudent, and subtle. He will suit his temptations to your constitutions and inclinations. Satan loves to sail with the wind. If your knowledge will be weak, he will tempt you with error. If your conscience be tender, he will tempt you to scrupulosity and too much preciseness as to do nothing but hear, pray, and read, etc. If your consciences be wide and large, he will tempt you to carnal security. If you are bold-spirited, he will tempt you to presumption. If timorous, to desperation. If flexible, to inconstancy. If proud and stiff, to gross folly. Therefore, still fit for fresh assaults, make one victory a step to another. When you have overcome a temptation, take heed of unbending your bow, and look well to it that your bow be always bent and that it remains in strength. The bow like a bow and arrow, always ready to go. When you have overcome one temptation, you must be ready to enter the list with another, or course with another. As distrust, in some sense, is the mother of safety, so security is the gate of danger. A man had need to fear this most of all, that he fears not at all. If Satan be always roaring, we should be always a-watching and resisting of him. And certainly, he that makes strong and constant resistance of Satan's temptations shall in the end get above his temptations, and for the present is secure enough from being ruined by his temptations, etc. For a close of this, remember that it is dangerous to yield to the least sin to be rid of the greatest temptation. To take this course, whereas if a man should think to wash himself clean in ink, or as if a man should exchange a light cross made of paper for an iron cross, which is heavy, toilsome, and bloody. The least sin set home upon the conscience will more wound, vex, and oppress the soul than all the temptations in the world can. Therefore, never yield to the least sin to be rid of the greatest temptation. The footnote, he that will yield to sin to be rid of temptation will be so much the more tempted and the less able to withstand the temptations. Sidonius Apollinarius related how a certain man named Maximus, arriving at the top of honor by indirect means, was the first day very much wearied, and fetching a deep sigh, said, "O Damocles, how happy do I esteem of you for having been a king but the space of a dinner, and I have been one whole day, and who can bear it no longer?" I will leave you to make the application, says Brooks. And that is the end of that device. That was device number 8. And that actually is the end of the overall section of devices Satan has to keep the to keep souls in a sad, doubting, and questionable condition. And Lord willing, we will plan to go on to the fourth overall section. There are several ways and devices Satan has to destroy and ensnare all sorts and ranks of men in the world. But until then, go in God's graces, and especially in resisting sin and hating of sin out of love to God. And Lord willing, we will talk to you again soon.